Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Paul and Allison Fraze from the Joshua Fraze Foundation. So, what can you tell me about the hopes for the Fraze Foundation for 2017?
We are really excited about 2017. I feel like this is going to be the year for our community on many levels with many initiatives that we are supporting. There is the gene therapy project is moving forward. There is a small drug molecule that is being set in motion for clinical trials. There is the potential of another clinical trial that we are hoping they can iron out the wrinkles and get it figured out. But we are, this last year, we gave contributions to three different institutions. And we really feel very good about how things are moving forward for myotubular myopathy especially.
So, for those who might have missed our prior interview, can you tell me a little bit about the Joshua Fraze Foundation's work?
Sure. Our son Joshua was born in 1995 with a rare and fatal muscle disorder called myotubular myopathy. At that time, there was very little research being done here in the U.S. We started his foundation when he was about a year old. And we have been involved funding cutting-edge genetic research for 20 years and moving research forward, involved in data collection, international registry. But patient advocacy is really my number one commitment. And I help parents navigate caring for their children very early on and how to care for them and provide them with resources and also connect the institutions with clinicians within our field that are very well versed on how to care for these children as well.
So, have there been any challenges in this past year that, looking forward to 2017, you would hope to overcome?
If I had a huge influx of money, I could move this forward a whole lot quicker. I see what's going on within the labs, within the researchers are doing, and I see the work, and I see the potential and the possibilities, and it's right there in front of me. And I know if I had more support to fund them and for them to be able to hire additional staff and to move these programs forward, it would take us, I believe it would move us forward that much quicker.
So, on the converse side, looking ahead to the new year, what sort of successes do you anticipate for the foundation?
Paul, would you like to answer that?
I apologize. What's the question again? I can barely hear you. That's what I'm asking.
In terms of the successes you've seen, what would you like to see continue or in greater measure in 2017?
Did you say in clinical measure?
No, in greater measure. What are our hopes for the foundation in greater measure for 2017?
Well, I mean, the ultimate hope is to get the science from the bench to the bedside and to get this cure to the children, period. I mean, and the only way to do that is to press research, press the science, press the, you know, obviously we need dollars in order to do all of that. But the faster we can put the pressure and move this forward and get into clinical trials with the FDA, the faster this cure gets to the children. It's all about saving lives.
So
I would like to, can I add to that, Cam?
Certainly.
I feel that 2017, you know, for the foundation would be to support the entities that are in place that are already moving forward, to continue to support the community. Our goal is, of course, to start seeing these therapies move from the bedside, you know, to the patient, from the lab to the patient, and to support all entities that are moving forward, that are working tirelessly to bring a cure for this disorder and other indications under affiliated with central nuclear myopathy.
So what are the next immediate steps for the foundation?
There's always a constant flow of projects that are ongoing. Right now I'm focused heavily on major gifts, continuing to educate families as they, as I am connected with them, data collection. Our international patient registry is really key. We are now in collaboration with the NIH and Boston Children's Hospital, and that data is being used for a clinical trial and also to determine the true demographics for our society. So there's always a constant flux of several different things going on, but those I would say are my top three.
So, if you could send any message to the community about the need to keep pushing forward, what would you say?
I would say to the families, do not give up hope, first of all. To live life to the fullest, you know, every day is precious with these families as they care for these medically fragile children. But I would also say to get involved, that your voice is being heard. The rare disease community is really has a huge, everybody's stopping to listen to the rare disease community and to get involved in any research initiatives you can, fundraising efforts, to bring awareness to your family's challenges, the indications that you're dealing with. You know, every voice counts, and their voice matters.
Like to thank you both for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. My friends, I find it's always the rare conditions that have the hardest time. But the fact is, whether it be an orphan disease or a household name, every condition, every disability is entitled to consideration. For the fact is, no matter who the person is who's affected, they have someone who loves them in this world, someone who has faith they can and will accomplish. That's why it's such an amazing story Paul and Allison bring to the table. For they love their son, and even though he has a rare condition, they're saying to the community, he's a blessing to our lives, and we believe there is hope for the future. And anyone out there feels alone or trapped or doesn't have a lot of hope, they can reach out. They can find solutions, innovations, something just to make things a little more positive. Simple truth of it is, in disability life, when you stop hoping, you stop caring, that's when the condition wins. That's when it takes over. Cease to be a person defining that condition. you become defined by it. That is why none of us must ever, ever say there is no support. I am not entitled to any hope or any support, because this is a condition most people might not be as familiar with. There should always be that consideration. There should always be doors being opened for people with disabilities. Those coming from the small agencies, I find they tend to have the biggest hearts for their works. They believe, truly and sincerely, that things can get better. And I would encourage them to keep pushing forward, keep making a positive difference in the community. You're affecting more than you realize out there. And that is not to be overlooked. But yes, it is a question of bringing people together, sharing insights, sharing ideas, sharing hope. And that can be a difficult thing to do. But in this day and age, social media and online access, it's not nearly as difficult as it used to be. For someone who has a loved one affected, but doesn't really know what this is, and doesn't know where to look, and the medical community hasn't quite gotten there yet. They haven't quite found the right person to talk to. I would say, don't give up. Don't say, just because I don't have an answer yet, means there is no answer. It's not the way to look at it, my friends. Allow yourself the patience and the faith to believe that you can and will find hope and answer and support. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
The Campus Pride Center is a new UWSA service that provides a safe space on campus for the LGBTQ plus community and their allies. The Campus Pride Center is located in Dillon Hall in room 252. Campus Pride hosts a variety of events throughout the year and celebrates important events such as National Coming Out Day and Transgender Day of Remembrance. For more information, come down to the Campus Pride Center or contact Courtney Quinn at campuspride@uwindsor.ca.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handicapable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Paul and Allison Fraze from the Joshua Fraze Foundation. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Melissa Miner and Joe Ritchie from the Downtown Music Initiative. So, can you tell me a little bit about how Joe has contributed to the work of the DMI?
Well, Joe plays many roles at the DMI. On Saturdays, he helps me teach our violin class to about 12 students. And on throughout the week, Joe is also my assistant, so he has the title Assistant Director of the Downtown Music Initiative. And he takes care of all the scheduling whenever volunteers need to change their schedules or if students can't come. Everyone just notifies Joe. And he also updates our Facebook page. And, yeah.
So, during your last interview, you mentioned that his disability has never once hindered his work or effectiveness. Can you reiterate a little bit on that?
Well, the locations where he comes to, they're all wheelchair accessible. One place has an elevator, so that way, because we teach the violins downstairs, so he's able to get down there to teach. And another place actually built a ramp for him to go up on the stage so he could teach the praise band when we had it at that time. So, and all the other work that he does is mostly on computer or iPad or telephone in terms of getting hold of students and teachers and parents about our schedule changes and stuff like that.
So, Joe, you've been on once before. For those who might have missed that interview, can you take us through a little bit of your story and how it led you to the DMI?
Yeah, sure. Let's see. It'll be 27 years this May. May 27, 1990, I was in a car accident, and I had broken my neck. So I'm literally a 5, 6, 7 level quadriplegic and incomplete, so I do have a lot more ability than some, but I'm definitely still mostly paralyzed and considered a quadriplegic. So, and that's been, you know, a long time, 27 years. So you could say I got used to things. But yeah, you know, it took me through many different areas of life, I guess, ups and downs and ins and outs. Some really hard times, some really sad times, but it definitely brought me to some really great times. And I guess you could say through the whole the process, the crux of the story is that I ended up getting to meet God, and I have a relationship with Jesus Christ. And in that process, that's how I met Melissa. But that was like many moons ago, when she was just a young person at church going to youth group. And I was an intern pastor at the time. So we met that way. And that was how we built a relationship in order to, I guess, reconnect years later when she started the DMI. That was about, what, 3 years, 4 years now? 4 years, right.
Well, to be fair, she's still a very young person.
I agree. Totally agree. And yeah, that reconnection was I just think, really perfect in timing, you know, that kind of stuff. Because my kids were young, and we were looking to expand their musical abilities as well, because they play piano, and Melissa was offering violin at the time. So we put the kids in some violin, and that also helped me to, see another side of helping out. And I was helping out with some of the violin back then. But I took a long time off, and just over a year ago, I really felt like it was time to help again. So I contacted Melissa, and she had said, the words I used to contact her were the exact words she was thinking and praying, and I really kind of hit a high note, so to speak. And we began that relationship again, and it was very quickly that it was seen that the assistant side of what she needed was where I fit best. And was being her assistant and the scheduling and all that other stuff. But aside from that, doing the violin teaching on Saturdays was part of the process. And praise band became something that was added on, and now it's off again. But just absolutely love being a part of the Downtown Music Initiative, to really see and watch children grow musically and just be part of the community and helping out. It's just absolutely wonderful.
So, in terms of being a person with a disability, educating these young ones, mm-hmm. how have they responded? Have they treated you with the respect and dignity that should be accorded to everyone? Or?
Far and above. Absolutely wonderful, really. Lots of love, lots of smiles, lots of just warmth and tenderness from every single person. And there's never been an awkward moment. There's never been anything that has been, I would call, you know, not honorable or disrespecting. Never, ever. And it's been fun in some ways. The kids just absolutely seem to be, I don't know, attracted to the wheelchair in a way, and the adults respect me too. And it's just been great.
In this way, these kids growing up around a person with a disability, they're going to come to understand that it's just a part of life. It's a part of who a person is. It's not a complete picture. You're a Christ follower, a teacher, an assistant to Melissa, mm-hmm. many more things.
Right on.
So, what's been the greatest success that you've experienced in your work with the DMI?
I'd say the greatest success has been the relationships that's been built through this process. Watching children grow musically, that's absolutely wonderful, and the gift of sharing music is wonderful as well. But I think the most meaningful thing has been the relationships that have been built. When we had praise band on, that's where we took a bunch of kids and we were teaching them kind of, you know, more church music, so to speak. And I was kind of in charge of that, and I was teaching them the church music stuff, and we were having lots of fun, and we went on for, you know, quite a long while with that. And then when I decided to take that time off, that's when you really see the effect you make. And a bunch of the kids and parents were all really upset and sad that it wasn't going to be happening anymore because of the connection and relationship that was being built. So it's really interesting. That's the most rewarding thing.
So if each of you could send a message about the need for inclusion in any program, such as the DMI, what would you say?
I would say, like, if students feel like they're being held back or assume that they can't do something just because of their disability, I would say follow your dreams in terms of, well, this is specific to music playing. So if you really want to play an instrument or sing or whatever, you can do anything you set your mind to, and we can accommodate whatever different accommodations you might need. And you can really do anything you set your mind to, and you don't have to let this disability that you might have hold you back.
Right on. And to complement that, I think I would say, you know, I'm a 5, 6, 7 level quadriplegic. My hands are actually partially paralyzed, yet I still play guitar. I can still tinker on a violin. I can tinker on a piano. I understand music theory, and be able to share that, you know, is great. But anyone out there who thinks they can't do something because they have some sort of disability, no, turn that around and make that your ability, and use that to drive you forward and learn something new. This music thing can definitely be learned by anybody, disability or not, and I would encourage anyone out there, especially the young ones that could be listening, please contact us and, you know, take that step forward, a little leap of faith, and try out a musical instrument and try learning something new.
I'd like to thank you both for taking the time out to do this.
Thank you.
Of
course. My friends, Joe is exactly right in that he says disability can be turned around. It can be something that is owned or claimed as part of a person's life. Part of a person's life. Not the whole show. But one of the big things the disability community must always work on is awareness. For if you were to hear the words quadriplegic music instructor, most people have this image of a quadriplegic person being bedridden, unable to move or function productively within society. There are varying levels, and it's a very backward notion to assume that one has all the answers. But Melissa's story of forging a genuine respect, partnership, and friendship with Joe speaks very well to the fact that by working alongside someone with a disability, getting to understand them, that illusion of what they can't do starts to seem smaller and smaller, because you'll realize that they can and will achieve. I believe disability need only be limited by imagination, not just the imagination of the one affected, not just their beliefs about what they can or cannot do, not just their hopes for the future, but for those in society who make the innovations, who make the latest medical breakthroughs, who develop the technologies to make things work. Are we so limited that we're going to say we can't fathom a better way or more innovative approach for people affected? Are we really going to say that our minds can only expand to a certain degree and to say, these people just have no hope, they have no answers? No, that is not the way the world works. There will always be that someone with an idea, with an innovation, with the willingness to try, to work, to learn. And that's what Joe's story is all about. Finding what he wanted to do and coming to a place where he believed in himself enough that he could actually get out there and do it. It does take a certain faith, whether religious or otherwise, to live with a disability. Faith in oneself, faith in the supports around a person. Recognizing that it's not just you against the world, but that sometimes you do have to press. You have to ask that the supports that are supposed to be in place be in place. Say, I need help with this, if you need help. There's no shame in it. There's no disrespect there. For the fact is, nobody gets through life entirely on their own. Nobody succeeds without a little boost from someone, sometime. And why in the world would anyone choose to disregard someone simply based on the way they think, or speak, or move, or what have you? The truth is, everyone is entitled to equal consideration. And I think Joe's very presence in the DMI sends a valuable message to the next generation of leaders to say, yes, this person gets around a little differently. Yes, he may play his instrument a little differently. But that is not all important. That is not all defining. This is a part of who this man is. This is one factor. This is something we can learn to accept and to work with. Disability is essentially a set of circumstances, a set of building blocks. And the question that falls to each one of us is, what are we going to do with them? Are we going to turn bitter and angry? Are we going to recoil within ourselves? Are we going to assume there's no help and no hope? Or are we going to try to carry the pieces of what you want to do and make them fit together to say, this is what I want to do, this is how I can do it. I can't do it this way, necessarily, but I can adapt it. And that is where the principle of innovation really springs from. Starting with the question, how do I do this? What can make this work? Joe's end message is, come out and try it. Very, very good message. How can a person know they will not succeed, they will not accomplish, unless they try? If they don't take that step to say, I want to be a part of this world, you're relegating yourself forever being the onlooker, watching all those dreams you wish could be, rather than taking a chance to say, I want to be a part of this. I want to be included. And more than that, I have a right to be included. I have a right to some consideration. Maybe not an unfair advantage, maybe not having the deck stacked completely one way. But equal opportunity, equal chance to succeed or to fail. Sometimes people with disabilities do fail in things they accomplish. That's how they learn. That's how they gain strength and wisdom. But sometimes they succeed. And sometimes they even make the world a little better, a little stronger, a little more understanding because of it. Success and failure go together as part of the human experience. I said the human experience, not just people without disabilities or people with disabilities. Something we all must experience. It's just a question of how, when, and where, and the impact of that. Have we learned anything? Can we carry the strength from this to do better by our community and by ourselves? This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. You've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.